Welcome to our deep dive. We're looking into those final stages of an audit today. You know, a bit after the main field work, but right before the auditor actually signs off.
Exactly. This is where some really crucial detective work happens. We want to show you how auditors make sure that financial story is, well, not just accurate for the year that's passed, but also reflects any big shifts right up to the moment they issue their report.
It's about those essential completion and review procedures. So let's start with subsequent events. These are things happening after the company's year-end date, right?
That's right. Between the balance sheet date and when the auditor signs the report, or sometimes even facts discovered after the report is issued.
Okay.
And what's really interesting here, I think, is that not all these events are treated the same way. International Accounting Standard 10, IAS 10, splits them into two types.
Two types, right. Let's unpack that. So First you have adjusting events.
Yes. Adjusting events. Think of these as providing new sort of clarifying evidence about conditions that already existed at the reporting date. It's like getting a missing piece of the puzzle for something that was already happening.
Okay, so give us an example, like the Golf Is Us case. Customer goes bust on January 2nd, owes $211,000. That tells you something about whether that debt was collectible back at December 31st, doesn't it?
Precisely. Even though it happened after year-end, it confirms a condition, the potential non-recoverability that was present at year-end. So you'd adjust the accounts. Other examples, maybe allowances for damaged inventory found later, or agreeing on a tax liability amount.
Got it. And the other lip, non-adjusting.
Non-adjusting events. These relate to conditions that simply arose after the reporting date. The situation just, well, didn't exist at year-end.
Okay. Like the Murray Co. example. A fire destroys inventory on February 5th. That's clearly after year-end.
Mm-hmm.
Or their sales director suing on January 3rd. New events.
Exactly. Or issuing new shares, major mergers, post-year-end. Those are non-adjusting. They don't change the year-end numbers, but they often need to be disclosed in the notes if they're significant.
So what's the auditor's role in all this? They can't just wait for information to fall into their lap, surely.
No, absolutely not. The auditor has what we call an active duty. They need to perform procedures specifically designed to identify subsequent events up until the date they sign their report.
Like what kind of procedures?
Well, inquiring of management and those charged with governance, reading minutes of meetings held after the period end, reviewing the latest interim financial information, looking at cash flow forecasts, budgets.
Checking things like post-year-end receipts and payments, too.
Yes, absolutely. And if they find a material adjusting event that management hasn't adjusted for, or a material non-adjusting event that hasn't been disclosed, well, that could lead to a modified audit opinion.
Right. So it's a crucial check. Okay, let's shift gears slightly to something really fundamental. Going concern. This is the basic assumption that a company will keep trading for the foreseeable future. Right? Usually at least 12 months from the year end.
That's the one, and it's a massive assumption. Because if a company isn't a going concern, the whole basis of preparing the financial statements changes.
How so?
You'd have to switch to a breakup or liquidation basis. Assets wouldn't be valued based on their use in the business anymore, but on what they'd likely sell for, you know, quickly. Inventory might need writing down significantly, and you might have new liabilities pop up, like redundancy costs.
Okay, that's a huge difference. And who decides if the company is a going concern or not? Is that the auditor's call?
Primarily, it's management's responsibility. They have to make the assessment, usually preparing forecasts for at least 12 months from the date they approve the financial statement.
And the auditor's job?
The auditor's job, under standards like ISA 570, is to get enough evidence about whether management's assessment is appropriate and, crucially, to conclude if there's a material uncertainty related to going concern that needs highlighting.
Are there specific red flags auditors look for? Things that shout potential problem here?
Oh, definitely. Lots of indicators. Things like having net current liabilities, meaning short-term debts, exceed short-term assets. Or defaulting on loan agreements, having to sell off major assets unexpectedly. Consistent negative operating cash flows, maybe not being able to pay staff or suppliers on time.
Like in the Murray Co. case study, they had several issues, didn't they?
They did. Projected negative monthly cash flows for the next year, paying suppliers late, and that major customer going into administration that impacts future income. Those are all serious warning signs.
So when auditors see these signs, what do they actually do?
They dig deeper. They'll analyze those cash flow forecasts very carefully. are the assumptions reasonable? They'll review loan agreements, see if any covenants are breached. They might inquire with the company's lawyers about outstanding litigation. They also consider if any of those subsequent events we talked about might make things better or worse. It's all about judging if the company can realistically meet its debts as they become due.
Makes sense. It's a forward-looking assessment based on current evidence. Okay, let's talk about mistakes or misstatements in auditor speak.
Right, misstatements. These are basically differences between what is reported in the financial statements amounts, classification, presentation, disclosure, and what should have been reported under the accounting framework.
And auditors find these during their testing. What happens then?
Well, under ISA 450, auditors have to accumulate all the misstatements they find during the audit, unless they're clearly trivial, even small ones.
They keep a running tally.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
And then they communicate these misstatements to management on a timely basis and ask them to correct them.
But what if management says no? Maybe they disagree it's an error or they think it's too small to matter.
That happens. If management refuses, the auditor then has to consider the impact of these uncorrected misstatements. Are they material, either individually or when you add them all up in aggregate?
Ah, the aggregate matters too.
Absolutely. Using Murray Co. again, that $211,000 uncorrected bad debt from Golf Is Us was almost certainly material on its own, but maybe they also had, say, a $15,000 disagreement on a provision, $50,000 of website costs wrongly capitalized, and $45,000 of overvalued work in progress.
Individually, maybe not huge compared to profits.
Perhaps not. But add them up, the $15K, $50K, and $45K makes $110,000. If total profit before tax was, say, $1 million, that $110K is 11%. Suddenly, that collection of individually smaller items becomes material when viewed together.
Right. So even small stuff adds up. And if it's material and uncorrected,
it could lead to a qualified or adverse audit opinion. The auditor can't give a clean opinion if the statements are materially misstated.
Okay, one last piece of this final stage puzzle. Written representations. What are these exactly?
Think of it as a formal letter or set of statements from management directly to the auditor.
What does it say?
It confirms certain things. Key ones are that management acknowledges their responsibility for preparing the financial statements and for the internal controls. Also, that they've provided the auditor with all relevant information and access they asked for, and that all transactions have been recorded and reflected.
So it's management putting their confirmation on record.
Yes, and it can also support other audit evidence obtained, especially for things involving significant judgment or estimation, like management's plans or intentions that might affect asset values.
Is this like the ultimate piece of audit evidence then? Management's word for it.
Ah, good question. No, critically it isn't. ISA 580 is very clear. Written representations provide necessary audit evidence, but they do not provide sufficient appropriate evidence on their own about any of the matters they deal with. Meaning, they support other evidence, they don't replace it. The auditor still needs to gather corroborating evidence through their own procedures. You can't just rely on management saying everything's okay.
And how reliable is this representation?
Well, its reliability really depends on the competence and integrity of management. If the auditor has doubts about management's integrity,
then the representation isn't worth much.
Pretty much. And if management flat out refuses to provide the requested written representations, that's a major red flag. It casts significant doubt on their integrity, and it's considered a scope limitation. It could even lead to the auditor issuing a disclaimer of opinion, basically saying they can't form an opinion.
Wow. Okay. So tying it all together, getting that final audit report signed involves much more than just checking the initial numbers. It's this intense period of looking at post-year-end events, assessing the future viability, dealing with errors, and getting formal confirmations.
It really is. It's a rigorous process designed ultimately to give stakeholders confidence in those financial statements. Understanding these final checks, subsequent events, going concern, misstatements, representations gives you a much richer perspective.
So next time you look at a company's annual report, maybe dig a little deeper.
Exactly. Check the notes for subsequent events. Consider what that auditor's report really says, especially around going concern. Think about what might lie behind those management representations. It prompts new questions, doesn't it? What will you look for now?